This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. Good afternoon. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We have some beautiful blue skies today, but that's going to change in the next 36 hours or so. We're looking at wet snow right now. It's 62 degrees at O'Hare and 52 at the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Let's kick things off with an update of Wall Street at Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, the Dow is lower by 165 points, or 0.2%, and the benchmark is now at 26,175. The NASDAQ is falling 22 points, or 0.25%, S&P down 14. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is off 0.1%. The International Monetary Fund cut its outlook for global economic growth to 3.3%. That is the weakest since the financial crisis a decade ago. Tariffs are cutting into international trade. Job openings dropped by 500,000 in the U.S. in February, the most in more than 3 years. But even at 7.1 million, job openings still exceed the number of unemployed workers. And the National Federation of Independent Business looked at how small business owners are feeling, and that level, looking at that reading, was at the highest in 3 months. Hiring plans are on the rise. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks, Lisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, why trade is so slow around the world. We will talk about that. And also, locally, debate over Lincoln Yards is getting hot.
Walmart using more and more robots to replace workers. We'll get some insight into that and what may be coming down the line in the future. Also, Travel Tuesday, the top U.S. airlines have been ranked. Also, a double dose of Travel Tuesday. Will American flyers want to get on Boeing 737s in the wake of a couple of crashes? All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Discussing the news affecting your money, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Lots of data in today as we look ahead to the week ahead. Andy Bush is joining us. Andy is an analyst here in the Chicago area. Andy, it's always good to have you on the show here. When it comes to issues, I guess, in the wider economy, why don't we just begin there? What have you been looking at lately that you've seen that is maybe concerning or maybe that makes you feel good about the way things are going?
Well, I mean, we just had the IMF Global Economic Report come out, and that downgraded global growth for 2019. So that's on the minds of a lot of investors out there. And I thought what was interesting in that report was that they said the downshift mainly comes from global trade, right? They reduced it down 0.6% for 2019. And, of course, that comes on the heels of today's $11 billion tariff on EU goods that the U.S. just imposed. So as we look out into the future, we've got three big problems on trade. We've got the U.S.-China trade negotiations going on. They haven't ended yet. We've got to get the old NAFTA, or the USMCA, the new one passed. And now we've got a trade flare-up with the EU. So to me, looking out into 2019, it's not going to be as fast as 2018, obviously. And so there's some bumps in the road here that we're coming up to that the IMF's highlighting. And I guess, you know, from where I stand, the thing that worries me the most is that the Fed doesn't have the same ammo available to it for the next recession as it did in 2008 and really the last five recessions. So that's a big concern of mine.
Let's talk about that Chinese trade deal. This has sort of been hanging out there for a long time. There's obviously a hope that at some point it will be taken care of. But when it is, whatever the deal looks like, is there something that can really be a positive out of all this, especially as it's been going on for so long?
Well, the big positive would be coming to an agreement in which you can deal with some of the trade actions by China, specifically on intellectual property and cybersecurity. Even IMF's Christine Lagarde has said, hey, if the U.S. can negotiate that between the U.S. and China, that's great for the rest of the world. But that is the most difficult thing to get done, and I think that's why these talks are dragging on. That's hurdle that they got to get over. Fixing the U.S. trade deficit, we could do that with China anytime we want. All the Chinese have to do is just buy more oil, buy more agriculture from us, and we'll get that down pretty quickly. So as far as the China trade goes, that's where the rubber meets the road, and that's where they're having a hard time right now.
Here's another area, small business, where optimism, we're told, is rebounding in March.
Yeah, and I think, and that's a great sign. That would lead one to believe that we're going to see a pickup in growth in the second quarter. If you look at some of the estimates already, they're around 2.3% for Q2, and that Q1 is going to be somewhere around between 1.5% to 2%. And you can almost throw out Q1 to some extent because it always seems to be some weird outlier for bad growth, always in the first of the year. I'm not quite sure why, but we had a lot of things going on, including government shutdown happening then, and the polar vortex. So there's a lot of bad things that happened in Q1 that aren't going to happen in Q2. But again, referencing back to the IMF report, they still see a slowing global trade situation that's weighing on global growth overall.
U.S. job openings dropped and to an 11-month low in February, and hiring decreased. I guess you can always, if the report is big enough, you can find a good and bad news.
Yeah, and I think with that one, I mean, if we think about February, the non-farm payroll numbers were really soft at 33,000. They rebounded, obviously, in March, and we got those numbers already. So that number that you're talking about was a number from February, and it declined about 500,000. And you know, we've seen strong U.S. job growth, and that's been great. And that gives one optimism about what's happening going forward. It's really hard to hit a recession when, you know, you're seeing the job rate below 4%. It's really hard to, you know, get rapidly slowing growth when jobs are that plentiful. So that's, you know, I would just take that with a big grain of salt. February was a bad cold month, and I know my pipes froze, so I hope nobody else experienced that in February.
Economic indicator.
Yes, exactly. Andy, thanks for being with us. Andrew Bush, you can find him online at andrewbush.com. Coming up, a vote's been delayed on two major development projects in Chicago.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A vote on the use of tax increment funding for the Northside Lincoln Yards and South Loop 78 developments been delayed. Let's get the latest from Greg Hines, columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. And Greg, let's begin with that. What exactly is the latest in some of this back and forth on these projects?
Well, this is kind of a moving target, as they say, but it would appear that the City Council Committee on Finance is going to meet tomorrow morning, Wednesday morning, and will consider and probably take a vote on this after having delayed a vote that originally was supposed to have occurred yesterday.
Now, the mayor has told Mayor-elect Lightfoot that he would delay a vote, but he doesn't necessarily have all the power here, does he?
Oh, this is still Rom City Council. If he didn't want this to come up for a vote, Pat O'Connor determined the committee wouldn't call it for a vote. So one could assume that if Mr. O'Connor does call it, and that's the appearance now, that's with the support of the mayor. I mean, what's really going on here is kind of a little bit of a dance between Rahm Emanuel, the outgoing mayor, and Lori Lightfoot, the incoming mayor. And there is beginning to be a little bit of appearance here that Lightfoot got a little bit. She got a little bit of a delay, but now she's going to not reach a huge deal if Rahm flexes the muscle he has in the old city council and pushes this thing through nonetheless.
Who is in favor of the Lincoln Yards and against when in the mayor's chair there?
Well, the mayor is for it. This planning department is for it. And they say that the investment of over $2 billion in tax and income and financing subsidies is worth it, that the city of Chicago is going to get lots of growth and development and tax revenue down the road, and that we need to do things like down to 78, one of these two things where there's going to be a new CTA station that would presumably unlock the value of this property that's been abandoned pretty much since World War II. The other side says, hey, we have a lot of other needs. for Chicago, if we're going to spend tax money here, let's spend it on something else, and that maybe we can get a better deal. Maybe these developers could pick up part of these infrastructure costs themselves instead of putting it on the public nickel, as is proposed under what's before the council.
Is the belief that, especially when it comes to Lincoln Yards, turning around all that land, making it land that you got a lot of people living on it, playing on it, maybe even working on it, it seems like property tax-wise and even sales tax-wise, it's going to generate a lot of money for the city. Is that part of the push to get this done?
That is part of the push to get it done. And there's no question that this would probably incent some growth that wouldn't have occurred otherwise. But one of the arguments on the other side is that, hey, it could be too much growth. You're talking about 50, 60-story buildings right in the middle of the river where, you know, where you're surrounded by one- and two-story buildings. One of the arguments is that this is going to bring a lot of traffic congestion that the infrastructure improvements aren't going to improve. So it kind of depends on your perspective. There's some merit to both cases, but right now it looks like to me like this is going to come up tomorrow and Mayor Emanuel is going to get his way.
And is there as ongoing as the new officers come in and the old ones out, is there room for Rahm Emanuel to still be talking about what he likes in Chicago, what he's for?
Oh, sure. I mean, Mayor Emanuel was mayor of Chicago until middle of May. He has the legal power, but in the way of transitions, when you're a lame duck, your power starts to kind of fly away and fall aside, which is why this thing with Lori Lightfoot saying put this on hold for a while moved him a little bit. But it doesn't appear that it's moved him enough to probably put a stake in it, as she has seemed to suggest.
It's sort of a legacy project for the mayor, right? That's why he wants to get it done?
Well, I think history would record that this mayor's greatest accomplishment is he revitalized the central area economy of the city, the core of the metropolitan area. I mean, the number of jobs there is a record level. There's all kinds of investment. If you work downtown, just look outside at all the cranes and the new work going on. And he wants to protect that. One way to protect that is to open up new areas on the periphery of the loop that are underutilized now, like the 78 property, which is empty, so that new developers want to come in and attract more jobs will have a way to do it. People won't be forced to cram everything into the conventional central business district. That's what he's trying to do. I understand what he's trying to do, and I happen to agree with much of it. But like I said, there is another side to the story.
Yeah, always is. Thanks so much, Greg Hines, columnist at Crain's Chicago Business. Still ahead, Travel Tuesday. University researchers rank the best and worst airlines in the U.S., and Bloomberg checks the markets next.
WBBM News Time 12:25. Business news sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. And here's Elisa Peretti.
Well, Chris, the Dow is lower by 177 points, or 0.2%, and the benchmark has tumbled back to 26,164. NASDAQ lower by 28 points, or 0.3%, and the S&P down 15. That's a loss of 0.5%. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is in the red, down about 0.1%. And crude oil futures, which had been headed higher so many sessions in a row, are also hitting the pause here, down about 0.3%, but still trading above $64 a barrel. Now let's get a look at the grains. For that, we check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
USDA came out at 11 with their supply and demand report. Wheat and corn were a hair higher than expected. Beans were a hair lower. Before the report, we were looking at 2 to 4 lower. We went to the plus side, but at the moment, we have corn down 3/4 in July. December's down 1/2. We have July beans down 3/4. November's down 3/4, and July wheat down 4. So mixed prices after the report. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are in the red today. We'll see what's hurting the markets.
Travel Tuesday. Researchers sift through mounds of data to issue their annual ranking of airlines here in the United States.
Retailers increasingly turning to robots for tasks formerly handed by humans.
The owner of Westlake Hospital in Melrose Park suspends services at the facility.
The U.S. Attorney General says he hopes to release a redacted version of the Mueller report within a week.
On Wall Street right now, we're seeing red, the Dow down 181, the S&P down about 16, and NASDAQ off by 31.
Beautiful sunshine throughout your day, heading to a high of 65 degrees. Tomorrow, though, a high of just 40 with some snow in the area. Right now, 60 at O'Hare and Midway, 58 degrees along the lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank.
Markets are lower this hour. We're joined by Brian Battle, Director of Trading at Performance Trust Capital Partners here in Chicago. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Brian. Tell us what you're seeing today.
Yeah, Chris, as you indicated, this is the first day in eight that we've had a sell-off in the S&P 500. So an eight-day rally ended here. But really, the rally the past 8 days has been sort of lukewarm. It hasn't been up hundreds and hundreds or up 50, up 60, not a big deal. But in context, you know, over the past year, so not year-to-date, but in the past 12 months, the Dow is up 12%, S&P is up 15%, and the NASDAQ's up almost 19.5%. So the stock market's come a really long way. Not unusual to think that we're having a little distress here. The bull market's getting a little tired. What's happening is happening to us here in the very short term is some things are coming together. You know, there's a lot of talk of the U.S. having a tariff war with China that might be resolving. The U.S. is talking about closing the border with Mexico, which is unbelievable. They're our third biggest trading partner in the world. So that's maybe a political thing, maybe not an economic thing. And then today, the Trump administration was talking about threatening tariffs on the European Union and their aircraft manufacturers. So really, we're taking a pause here for political reasons, maybe not economic, but by and large, because the U.S. economy seems to be doing okay. We had a big scare at the fourth quarter, you know, November, December, January. We're kind of through that period. We're out of the deep freeze. The economic statistics are coming in average. But we're sort of getting some turbulence here from political headlines.
Tell us about the trade situation right now.
So the U.S. is supposed to be working on a grand bargain with China and how we're going to have fair trade. I think that it will resolve itself in the near term. It should have happened in December, or Trump said he was going to impose a lot of tariffs. Then we got a delay until March. Then we got another delay. So I think this will just sort of work itself out to some sort of agreement, and everyone gets to walk away and save face. You know, the economic conditions aren't helpful to either economy, but I think the president and the administration will probably capitulate because we're getting way too close to the midterm elections, and they need some political relief from that headline. And that'll be good for everyone. I mean, it's not just a political story. It's a let's just get back to business and keep the politics out of global trade.
And, I mean, unless there's something really dramatic in that trade deal, do you see any sort of a bump on Wall Street, or is the expectation that there will be a deal kind of baked into what we're seeing?
Yeah, that's right, Cisco. I think we have that baked in. You know, the stock market in the U.S. is ground higher and higher. Generally, you know, it's horrible if you're a specialty manufacturer that needs just a certain kind of steel from China, or if you need a certain kind of raw material from China. It's probably horrible for you. So there will be specific relief and a great joy in some sectors of the economy, but generally, I think a lot of that news is priced in into the market so far.
Now, we have Bank of America saying it's going to raise its minimum wage to $20 an hour for its employees. A lot of major corporations are doing this where they're raising the wages. So you have wage inflation. That means that their employees have more money to spend, but it might put pressure on earnings. It just, as an investor, talk about some of the challenge of negotiating that, because we don't really know where wages are going to go over the next, say, year to 18 months.
Exactly right. So that's the thing that the Federal Reserve is supposed to be keeping track of. They're supposed to have the economy grow, have a stable value of the currency, and encourage full employment. So that last thing is what's been giving the Federal Reserve fits, is because we have a really low unemployment rate, but there's no wage inflation. There are so many workers, so many people looking for work, that businesses aren't having to raise wages until now. So now we're seeing businesses having to raise wages to attract workers. That's a great signal for the U.S. economy. There's a demand for labor. That means there's a demand for production. So it's a positive thing for the U.S. if there is wage inflation, just as long as it doesn't get too high. We'll get a good signal on that this week. There is an economic, there's CPI and PPI come out this week, consumer price index and producer price index, which should give us all an idea of, hey, is there wage inflation or prices going up? And then the other thing, the other thing that's going to happen this week is the British are going to vote or not vote to leave the European Union on the 12th. I mean, it's a huge story that's been percolating since June of 2016. I think there's going to be an extension, but again, the thing the economy tends to be suffering from, or the markets are suffering from, are political headlines. So we'll get some good statistics this week, and we'll get hopefully some of this political noise out of the way.
Earnings season coming up. Do you expect it to be a good one? I know a lot of reports expect their earnings are going to dip.
Yeah, and that is a great point and something everyone should focus on. You know, you can listen to all the PhD economists and listen to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, but what matters the most is these business proprietors, what they think of their business and what they think of growth going forward. So earnings season is a great time to collect empirical data, and we do start earnings season. The big banks start reporting this Friday. We're going to start with JP Morgan and Wells Fargo, and they're going to tell us what they think of how the last quarter went, and what they think of the rest of the year. There has been, analysts are expecting a 4% drop in earnings per share year over year. I don't think that's going to be true. I think that we had a hard first quarter, and analysts tend to underestimate earnings because then everybody gets the surprise on the upside. So I think we're going to be okay. I think earnings season is going to go well, but everyone will still be cautious because of all those political headlines and the political risks that you can't measure. So businesses will be constructive and cautious.
Thanks very much for the conversation today, Brian. Brian Battle is Director of Trading at Performance Trust Capital Partners here in Chicago. Up next, Travel Tuesday, the 29th annual quality rating of U.S. Airlines is out.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Travel Tuesday. Research teams at Wichita State University and Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Arizona have released their annual report on the quality of U.S. airlines. Let's discuss the results with Joe Schwederman, Professor of Public Services and Director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University here in Chicago. Joe, we see, and let's just begin with the list here. We have Delta at number one. What is it about Delta that is these analysts, these professors were looking through things? What is it that they found that makes Delta number one?
You know, what's notable about this competition is they really just let the data talk. They don't have any customer surveys. They don't have nudge factors. They look at complaints. They look at on-time performance, things about some of the metrics on how it looks. And Delta does really well on the on-time performance. Atlanta is just an on-time machine. And they also tend to have fewer complaints due to customer service problems. And boy, these was one survey after another. The big three, Delta's coming out on top.
Yeah, and Delta seems to regularly be near the top of either this survey and either even other surveys. Obviously, it's a major airline, but I just think that Delta sometimes gets lost when there's a lot of talk about Southwest and United and American. And then, oh, yeah, by the way, Delta, pretty solid airline.
You know, it does. It's kind of a case of staying out of the news is usually good if you're an airline. And Delta's, I think, mastered that. But one thing that's notable about these past couple surveys is that United is consistently beating American. American fell down to 8 out of 9 on this. So there's, you know, a bit of a crisis for American in the sense that they used to be near the top, and now United is consistently outperforming them. So here locally, that drives the market share.
Oh, it's possible that, let's see, American is in 8th out of 9th place, that that all nine are good for getting into that the role here. So what's the problem with American?
Well, you raise a really good point. It has been a good year for airlines. You know, and time performance have been up. Of course, we got the 737 problem, which doesn't help Southwest. But it's been a fairly good run. And I think we're seeing, though, that customers are quite weary of the ultra-low carriers, that Spirit and Frontier and Allegiant, things like that, that, you know, consistently go out jam-packed, nickel and dime you. And there's a lot of fatigue as airlines, the big airlines, introduce their basic economy product. A lot of people are coming back to the big carriers.
Let's talk about some of these, as you mentioned, the low-cost airlines, because you have JetBlue and Southwest that are number 2 and 3 on this survey. I think when the low-cost airlines were initially taking off, some of the bigger airlines said, you know, people aren't going to like them because they're not getting those frills. But consistently, they're near the top of these surveys.
Yeah, as I say, the golden era of frequent flyer programs is over, in the sense that it used to be, unless you were a big carrier with a great frequent flyer program, you're not going to get the full fare business travelers. And things have changed now. We have affinity cards that let you pick what airline you want to fly on. And so we don't see these frequent flyer programs quite as important as just a few years ago. JetBlue is kind of an enigma, but they suffer a bit on the on-time performance. Just operating out of JFK Airport is a big headache. That's getting a little better, but they make up for it in the other metrics, especially the onboard service, which is a bit of a hit with customers.
Thanks so much, Joe Schwederman. Always good insight. Joe is professor of public services, director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul. This time tomorrow, Personal Finance Wednesday. Still to come, Walmart says robots will help them provide better customer service.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Walmart is among the retailers using robots for some common store tasks, and the company says customers will benefit. Let's learn more from Stephen Keith Platt. He's director of the Platt Retail Institute in Hinsdale and research director and adjunct professor at the Retail Analytics Council at Northwestern University. Welcome back to the news, Noon Business Hour, Stephen. Tell us about the robot janitors.
The robot janitors. Yeah, hi, Chris. So basically, they're automating the task of cleaning floors, which is freeing up labor to focus on customer service.
Does this mean that human beings will be laid off?
I don't believe that, no. The way robots in the front of the store are being deployed are really very much in a complementary fashion. So, for example, another type of robot they're deploying is what's known as a shelf bot, Chris, and a shelf audit bot. And what it does is it goes up and down the aisle scanning for incorrect pricing and any inventory that's not filled in to be sold to customers, freeing up associates to do things like work with customers to actually stock the shelves. In another instance, a large grocery chain out east has rolled out about 500 bots, or will be by the end of the year, that are used for spotting spills in the aisles. And so they'll alert an associate will clean it up. It's reducing insurance risk costs, false claims, et cetera. But it's not an issue of displacement of labor. It's an issue of relieving labor from tasks that are really not particularly enjoyable and letting them focus on more value-added services.
Yeah, and so earlier in the show, we were talking about wage increases. If you have some of these big companies that are increasing wages and some states increasing the minimum wage, it sounds like what you're saying is this isn't done necessarily in response to that, to wage increases. It's just a natural use of the new technology.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Cisco. And you know, the other reality is it's pretty tough to get labor that wants to scrub floors, right? And so this helps complement for the labor shortage that a lot of corporations are experiencing. And to the extent there is a cost savings, it enables them to do things like increase wages. So, I mean, I see the rhetoric in the papers about how robots are going to displace workers, and I don't think it's accurate.
Now, is there a chance that I think I read that robots in the use of this sort of technology could actually change store opening and closing hours, maybe giving retailers more options for letting people come in and get things from the store?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's just sort of like the Amazon Go. And in Asia, you see stores that have no humans whatsoever, little convenience stores, so to speak. I think that that's possible. That's not really as much robotics as it is optical recognition of products and facial recognition for payment or some other payment kinds of things. But what you're talking about is definitely a natural evolution, much more self-serve type options, all of which the consumer wants.
Stephen Keith Platt, thanks for being with us. Always appreciated. He's director of the Platt Retail Institute, also research director and adjunct professor at the Retail Analytics Council at Northwestern.
And News Time 1255 Business News is sponsored by FinishingChicago.com. And here's Elisa Peretti.
Well, Chris, no let up in the losses here. The Dow is down 183 points, or 0.2%, and the benchmark's at 26,159. NASDAQ lower by 0.4%, or 34 points, and the S&P giving back 16 points. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is falling 0.2%. The number of job openings exceeded the number of jobless Americans in February. The Labor Department says there are a bit more than 7 million open positions. And Walmart is giving some of the more mundane tasks to robots. It's adding thousands to stores to clean floors, check store shelves, and unload deliveries. With Business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, I'm Elisa Parenti. News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago. WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.